TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop, we've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
KYW Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
It's about, you know, who are you at 22? Where do you want us to take you? What kind of characteristics are you going to have when you walk in here and then when you walk out? That was very, very important to me, and that was something that I sold to the St. Joe's administration because I lived it. I know what it was, I know what it is, and I know what it can do for a player, and I knew what it can do for a program.
And our guest this week, St. Joseph's University head women's basketball coach, Cindy Griffin. Coach, thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me.
First of all, thanks for coming in as we're talking. It's mid-January. This is the grind for you, so appreciate you carving out some time in the midst of the season.
No problem.
So what is this time of the season like? Now you're getting waist deep in the conference. You're getting into kind of, I guess, the rhythm of a season where the conference play, you can kind of count the days of what's going to be on Tuesday, what's going to be on Wednesday, what's going to be on Thursday. Does it make it a little easier that there's a rhythm to the rest of the year?
I think so. You know, this is the midpoint of the season. We've been through non-conference, and now you're getting ready for conference. Our players actually go back to school today, so they'll be in a little bit more of a routine, if you will. Practice will be at the same time. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday. We play on Wednesdays and Saturdays or Wednesdays and Sundays. So for that reason, I think it's pretty well structured, and I think it helps this time of year.
So if I tell 18-year-old Cindy Griffin, who has just decided to go to St. Joseph's University, that in 2019 you will be in the midst of your 19th season as the head coach at St. Joe's, would you have believed it?
No way. Absolutely not. Never. Never. Never in a million years.
Was coaching always something on your radar, though, as you're playing basketball growing up?
Well, I think being a former point guard and working a lot of camps in the summer was certainly something I think I was good at as far as teaching the game, but didn't know that I was going to make a career out of it.
When did you start to make the decision that this is something I might want to make a career out of? Was it once the playing days are over, I need to stay in the game?
Well, I think there was two options. One, you get your CPA and be an accountant, which was what my undergraduate degree was, and graduate degree was in management. So it was either take that path or let me see what I can do in this game that has given me so much. How can I give back? And what am I going to enjoy the most? And so that took me to that path, and here I am today.
So let's go back a little further. What is your first basketball memory growing up? It's really kind of ingrained in your memory of when you fell in love with the game.
Well, I think it was third grade, and my sister was my coach. We played in the Upper Dublin Junior Association for Township Ball, and Kim was my coach, and she was my mentor. She was my my role model growing up, and so just being able to play and play for your sister and be able to compete and being the youngest of five children. Kim was the oldest. I was the youngest. We had three boys in between. So basketball was part of our upbringing. And so I remember that probably the most.
When do you remember it being not just fun, but, hey, you know what? I'm pretty good at this. I'm getting picked first or second. I'm getting attention.
I think eighth grade, you know, at the time when you had the CYO All-Star game and it was down at the Spectrum, if you remember that.
Nice.
Being picked to be the All-Star and being picked to represent your region. I think that's when it became pretty real. Like, okay, I'm pretty good at this.
And you went to McDevitt, right?
I did, yes.
So was St. Joe's always a radar? Was it a school you idolized at all, or were you not familiar growing up? What was your relationship with St. Joe's? Because you eventually ended up going there.
Yeah, I mean, we have a long history at St. Joe's. My first cousin, John Griffin, was the men's coach there. And we grew up watching John play at Roman. And he was the oldest of six children. I'm the youngest of five. Family's very close. And that's where it began. We went over to watch John play, and then being from McDevitt, we had some of our players go on to play at St. Joe's, Missy Foy, Trish Brown. So growing up, we would go to our games, and then if the St. Joe women had a game, we would go get our hoagies, get in the car, and go over to the field house and watch the women play.
Was there ever, when you start looking at colleges, was there ever any other school on the radar, or was it always going to be St. Joe's?
No, it wasn't going to be St. Joe's, actually, because it was way too familiar, to be honest with you. You know, I think I was a kid that wanted to get away. My top three choices were UConn, if you can believe that, UConn, Penn State, and St. Joe's. And UConn was just too far. It was too far away. Penn State was certainly in the top two with St. Joe's, but at the end of the day, my comfort level was St. Joe's growing up in the area. And allowing my parents to see us to play. And I think that was really the first priority.
Who was the coach at UConn? Was it Gino?
It was Gino.
Because he's from around here.
He is. And he coached my sister at McDevitt. He was the assistant coach under Jim Foster, who was the St. Joe coach at the time. So the familiarity with both coaches certainly steered me in the direction of, okay, I'm going to check out these two or three universities.
So you go to St. Joe's. You're a point guard. Do you feel, was there additional pressure because you were so familiar with St. Joe's and everybody was going to be able to watch it and you knew all about it going there once you start to play, especially as a point guard that has a lot of responsibility?
No, I think it was more, again, about a family and about comfort and knowing that you can play there and have your own legacy there and being around people that support you and have fun playing the game. And that's when you grow up in the Philadelphia Catholic League and you see a lot of the former players go there and have the success that they've had. It makes you want to be there even more.
So you have a lot of success personally and team-wise during your time on Hawk Hill. Was there a transition for you just as far as a lot of times when you talk to people going high school to college, regardless of how good they are, it's an adjustment, speed of the game, stuff like that. Did you feel that?
Absolutely. I mean, I was a freshman playing behind a senior point guard, Debbie Black, if you will. And Debbie had a great college career. She even had a better pro career, being playing for the Connecticut Sun and Defensive Player of the Year and all those things. So playing time was not something that I got freshman year, and it was a tough transition. And then I ended up tearing my ACL at the end of my freshman year and redshirting the next year. So really not the plan that you always think it's going to be or how it's supposed to be playing out. But, you know, perseverance and resilience and being around a supportive coaching staff and players, teammates, was instrumental in me having the success that I had as a player.
In retrospect, you mentioned the losing the season to the injury. Obviously, at 19, 20 years old, it's got to be incredibly frustrating. But did it help you because you watched the college game? Did it give you a different perspective?
No question. I mean, I think it gave you an opportunity, like you said, to sit and watch the game. And as a point guard, you think you know the game, right? Because you're pretty much the quarterback out there. You're an extension of the coach. But really taking a step back and being able to see the game in a different way, as a better teammate, as a better player, as a more coachable player, I think you really benefit from that. And so it's really making it a tough situation into a great situation.
So you end up playing a ton of basketball. I think, what was that incredible Malcolm Jenkins with the Eagles type number? You only didn't play like 19 minutes one season. That's remarkable. Do you realize something like that? Or you just, I'm just never coming off because this is what I want to do and I'm good at it.
Yeah, I never really thought about it. You know, I think, you know, as a freshman, you're not playing. And now all of a sudden, as a junior, you're playing every minute. I just never really thought about it. It wasn't something that I really ever thought about. I never thought about, oh, I can't get in foul trouble, those type of things. I think you just play and you play and you figure it out as you go. But, you know, certainly needed to have the stamina to do it. So you need to be in pretty good shape and understand, you know, when to take your breaks and when not to.
Is it something when you look back on it, are you like, wow, that's impressive? And even as a coach, like when you know substitutions and what goes into late game and stuff like that. I just read that, and that of all your accomplishments as a player, that just jumped off the page at me.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it you think everybody can do it, right? Because you did it. So why can't everybody play that many minutes? But it's not the case. And so understanding that as a coach, that, you know, when who can and who can't, and trying to get them breaks when needed, I think that's the biggest challenge as a coach, because you know, you want your best player to be on the court for as many minutes as she can be. But you know, based on the physicality of the game, based on different things that happen during the game, everybody's not equipped to do that.
Why do you think you were a good point guard? Was it floor vision? Was it unselfishness? Is it a little bit of everything? Because I think you're still fourth in program history in assists. And that's just not something that comes easy to a lot of basketball players, because it's a sport that's driven by points. Yeah. So what do you think made you such a good, not just player, but point guard specifically?
I think I did have great vision. I think I was able to see the floor and be able to give the ball to players in successful situations. I also think I had great coaches. You know, I think from grade school to high school to college, just understanding and having great players around you. I think that really makes everybody better when you have players that can complete the assist. You know, you see that you can get them in successful situations, but ultimately your teammates have to make the shot to get the assist. So I was fortunate that way. But definitely a pass first point guard, and I enjoy that. I got joy out of watching the assist turn into, or the pass turn into an assist.
And kind of as an aside, you mentioned, like, we talk about playing all those minutes, why can't everybody do that? Is it tough when you transition from player to coach? Because stuff, I don't want to say come easy, because I don't want to make it sound like you didn't work at it, but stuff that became natural to you, is it tough to adjust to maybe it doesn't come as natural to other players? And that's something you've kind of got to learn as a coach, that everybody has different skill sets and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely. I mean, I'm in this game and I'm coaching this game because I have a passion for this game. A lot of my teammates in college are not in the game. So we all have different paths. So we all love basketball, but at what level do we love it? Is it going to be our career? Is it going to be just something that, you know, we enjoy doing and we compete and all those things? So I think understanding who you're coaching is really, really important, because, you know, not everybody lives, breathes, and eats the game. And balance is really, really important. I'm really big on balance, you know, as far as other things in your life. So, you know, I think it's important to understand where the players are coming from and, you know, what they can and cannot, I guess, understand about themselves and the game.
So as a player, I think it was 3 NCAA tournament appearances. How much fun was that to just be a part of and to have to get to that level of success?
Well, it was great. And I think back then, I believe it was only 48 teams in the NCAA tournament. So a little school like St. Joe's, we had 2,500 undergraduate students at the time. I think that was remarkable. You know, we were beating teams that we shouldn't beat. And we've done that, you know, as far as the time they're coaching here. But I think that was remarkable, just to be able to put St. Joe's on the map from a national standpoint. And the Atlantic 10 is strong now, and it was even stronger with Penn State, and you had West Virginia, had Rutgers in the league. So those were NCAA teams, and you had the opportunity to play them twice a year, which really helped.
Any games, moments as a player stick out? If I ask you, let's talk about the top, how many moments during your career, what's at the top of that list?
I think the top of the list is beating GW at GW. I think we were the 6th seed, they were the 3rd seed. And I just remember I just remember that game, and Coach Foster was our coach, and it was a wild finish. I remember Dennis DeMeo was the referee, who recently retired, Philly guy. Joe McEwen was the coach, Philly guy from George Washington, and it was just, it went back and forth, back and forth. I think we squeaked it out by one, and that's one of them. And then the Rutgers, I think the next game was the Rutgers game, and beating them on our home floor for the semifinal.
So as you have all this success, playing careers winding down, how are you approaching the next step? Do you know at this point, all right, I want to coach, I want to stay close to home. How are you, and we talked about you could become a CPA, stuff like that. Break it down for me as your senior year winds down.
Yeah, so senior year, it was a matter of, again, two paths. Do I want to go into business, the business world, sit behind a desk, kind of push numbers, which is a great living, and it's a guaranteed living, mm-hmm. right? Or do I want to see where my contacts in basketball can take me? I'm young. I haven't had a paycheck yet, so making $12,000 as a restricted earnings coach at Vanderbilt, an SEC school, not so bad, right? Not so bad, because any paycheck is a great paycheck coming out of college. So I said, why not? Let's do this and see where this takes me. And, if it's not the path that I want to take, then we'll get back to accounting. You can always get back into accounting. So that's where it took me. And then being at Vandy for 2 years was great. Coach Foster was the coach at the time, so that was a nice connection there. And then from there, do I want to be a full-time assistant? Do I want to do all the things that you do as far as recruiting and game prep and player development and all those things? And the answer was yes, and was able to get hired by Patty Coyle at Loyola. And she was an assistant at St. Joe's under Jim Foster when I played. So there are a lot of connections. I've never worked for anybody that I haven't known, which is pretty incredible.
Right.
And I don't know if I would have. I don't know if it wasn't somebody that I knew and trusted. I don't know if I would have worked for them.
So you start coaching. What is the biggest thing that you had to learn that maybe as a player you had no idea coaches had to deal with, or you didn't realize how big a deal it was?
I think the game preparation, as far as the scouting and getting the scouting report and the amount of time that you spend watching film and breaking it down, not only your own team, but your opponent. And as an assistant, that's your job. You're in player development, you're scouting, and just the attention to detail that goes into one game. And it's a lot of work. It's probably about 8 to 10 hours of prep just for the assistant coaches. We as head coaches, we pick and choose. We'll watch two or three games. If it's a common opponent, we'll watch our game from last year. And then preparing our team for those practices leading up. So I don't think as a player you realize it. As a player, you get naps throughout the day. As a coach, you don't nap during the day. So I think that's a big change, with being a player and a coach.
So how do you learn that? Do the other assistants kind of walk you through like, okay, this is your game, this is what we need, X, Y, Z? Is it trial and error? How do you, kind of come to what is needed to do to have success?
Well, I think I've worked for some great people. When I was at Vandy, I worked for Coach Foster, but I also worked for two fabulous assistants who would just brought their team to the Final Four that year. So it was Debbie Patterson and Cammie Etheridge. And they were so great as far as attention to detail and kind of showing me what needs to be done. Again, I was the third assistant, the restricted earnings coach, if you will. So I scouted every game. Like I was actually doing the scouting report as a 22-year-old, which to me was absolutely ridiculous because it was an SEC school and here I am. And Coach Walsh would be like, well, what's the scouting report? And I'm like, okay, here we go. But if I didn't have Debbie and Cammie right there telling me what to do, then, I would have been even, more confused. But they did a really good job mentoring me and saying, this is what we need you to do.
Was there any moments in the early years, as you mentioned, 22-year-old doing all this, were there any moments of doubt like, oh boy, maybe that CPA is looking pretty good? Or even with all the work, when it's, I'm sure it's overwhelming, you're like, this is where I need to be.
Well, I think ultimately I wanted to have a family. I wanted to get married, have a family. And can you do that in this job? Can you have that balance in your life? So that was always the question, you know, can you do it? And so you find women that are out there that are married and have children and that are doing it. And you say, okay, I can do this because she's doing it. And that was really, really important for me. And the fact that, you know, being able to do that, I have an incredible husband, incredible kids, and my mom and dad have supported us, you know, when they were living. My mom's still alive, but that support system, I have brothers in the area as well. So that really, really helps you balance yourself, but also, you know, go ahead in your career and also, you know, ultimately have a family and do what you want to do.
So I'm interested, you talk about when you're recruiting, UConn was too far away. And so you're at Vanderbilt. How are you doing socially? Or are you just trying to keep your head above water with the job that you don't really notice that you're really far from home?
You know what, Matt, this is really embarrassing, but I really didn't even know where Vanderbilt was until I drove down there. I really, from a geographical, I was geographically ignorant. I really just didn't know, just growing up in Philly and just kind of being in this pocket, didn't realize where Tennessee was, Nashville was, you know, and Coach Frost was like, it's a city, you'll like it, you'll like it. I'm like, okay, here we go. So, you know, drove down there and it was in a city. So I knew that I could live there because coming from the Philly area, I knew if it was a secluded place, it was going to be really tough for me. But was able to meet a lot of friends, young athletic department, former players that were working in the athletic department, became friends with them. And, you know, socially, it was fun. It's a great town. I think it's really up and coming. Mm-hmm. Now it's really, really popular. Back then it was getting more popular. So, did just fine with balance down there for sure.
So then you come to Loyola. When you come to Loyola, you've got the experience as a player. You've got the experience in the SEC. Now you're on staff at Loyola. Is this the time when you start to think, maybe I'm getting close to being ready to pick up my own program, or you're not there yet?
Well, going to Loyola, that was the next step as far as being a full-time assistant and saying, okay, do you really want to do all this, right? When I was at Loyola, I had the opportunity to work for Patty Coyle, who is one of the best X's and O's coaches out there, and went on to coach the New York Liberty for over 10 years. But I knew Patty wasn't, you know, she was anxious to move to the next level. You know, she played at Rutgers, won a national championship, coached at Rutgers, coached at St. Joe's, and then got her own program at Loyola. And then what was going to be the next step for her? And that was one of the things that lured me to Loyola, because Patty was like, listen, if you know, I'm going to eventually move on. So if this is something you want to do, you know, do a good job. Let's see where it takes you. And sure enough, you know, she got the New York Liberty assistant job. I believe it was December of 98. Mm-hmm. And left in mid-year. And so, you know, it was a matter of, okay, is the AD Joe Boylan going to give me the keys to the car, right? As an interim or what have you. And so he did. And forever grateful for Patty and for Joe for entrusting me in the program as such a young coach. And again, you're being surrounded by people that support you. And assistant coach Joe Logan was with me, and he's now the head coach at Loyola now. And his wife, who was a graduate assistant at the time, Susan Bryce, is now Susan Bryce Logan. So we were, you know, had our first road trip, first game, I guess it would be in Chicago, Loyola Chicago, if you will. Mm-hmm. We're Loyola Maryland, and, you know, we're able to win two games on the road in my first debut, if you will, with UIC and Loyola. So pretty awesome.
So what are you, 29, 28-ish?
I am 28. I think I was 28.
Okay.
Yeah, 28.
Does it, first head coaching job anywhere, does it help that it's in midseason and you don't have a bunch of time to think and you're just kind of, all right, I'm in charge, here's what the postgame meal is, and we're playing, and let's go? Or are you just swimming? I mean, you said you won the first couple games, but I mean, when the games are over and you're not, are you just swimming?
Yeah, I think I probably lost about 15 pounds, but it was business as usual. You know, I wasn't trying to change anything. You know, I wanted the kids to be comforted that, listen, you know, Patty's done a really good job. We've done a good job together. We're going to be great. We're going to continue to do what we're doing, not trying to reinvent the wheel. Just carry on business as usual. And having those conversations with those players, I think, was very, very important. And, you know, they were sad that Patty left and didn't understand why in the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, they entrusted me and our staff and, you know, ended up having a nice year.
Is there a moment after a week, a month, after the season that you're like, oh, my gosh, I'm a Division I head coach? Like, does it do you have that moment of it all kind of sets in, and is it overwhelming at all, or do you never, it just feels right and you just roll?
Yeah, I think it feels right and you just roll. I don't know. I know at one point in time I was probably one of the youngest Division I coaches at the time.
When you were hired, you were seventh youngest.
So, like, at the time, I don't think you think anything of it, but looking back, you say, oh, man, okay, that was pretty cool, you know? Again, I do believe that all the preparation that that Patty and you know, Joe Boylan, the AD at the time, and the faith that they had in me to run the program just gave me more confident that this was the right move and this is what we're doing, and I felt very, very excited about it, but at the same time felt confident.
Time to take a break here on One-on-One. We will have more with St. Joseph's University women's basketball coach Cindy Griffin right after this.
It's the smart look at the issues catching fire in Philadelphia. Flashpoint.
What we have is a crisis.
This goes way beyond just the perpetrator.
You know how many times I had stopped people in front of my house from shooting up?
It was a moment where black and brown people on the margins got to say, no, we've been hurting.
I think we forget that you came from somewhere else too.
Host Cherry Gregg walks you through the flames. On air Saturday evenings at 9:30 and Sunday mornings at 8:30. Or search the Flashpoint podcast on the radio.com app.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates, so you can reach the exact people you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Own a small biz and need a reliable way to reach new customers? Try TikTok for Business.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today with TikTok for Business. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
And we are back with St. Joseph's University women's basketball coach Cindy Griffin on One-on-One. So you have success, basically 3 full years at Loyola. I think you're plus 15 win loss. You win a lot of important games. How does the St. Joe's opening come to light? Do you get a call saying we're interested? Does somebody tell you that this is going to happen? How's that come together?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I think there was a lot of stuff going on at St. Joe's, you know, and it was definitely on the radar that this may open up. And, you know, what direction is the university going to go? You know, do they want a former player? Do they want an assistant? At the time, like, I think now it's a head coaching job, but at the time, there were assistants being interviewed and hired for these type of jobs, right? You know, I felt confident about it because I knew that I was the right person for the job based on, you know, my history and based on, you know, what we had done at Loyola and what I think St. Joe's needed at the time. But at the same time, you know, you don't know which direction the AD and the board of directors are, and president are going at the time. So I'm just excited about the opportunity to interview and to sell myself back to St. Joe's and understand that this is Cindy the coach and not Cindy the player. And I think that's the important thing that that as a young coach going into the business, that's what you have to sell yourself as, especially at your alma mater, because they have to understand that it's not Cindy the player. Even though there was Cindy the player, there was a lot of respect for captain for 3 years, all those things. But, you know, how's that going to translate to Cindy the coach? And especially during that time where it was a little bit, you know, it was uneasy times at St. Joe's based on what had previously happened. So, you know, that was kind of, you know, how it was played out and ended up getting the job and things worked out.
So you say convince them that it's Cindy the coach and that's, how did you? What did you sell to say that I'm the right person and not just the player?
Yeah, so being the right person at St. Joe's is somebody that understands that the Hawk will never die. You know, I think that's who we are. That's our mantra. Understanding that sometimes you do more with less. Sometimes you're going to be selling players that that want to be, not selling, but getting players that want to be in the gym, that want to work on their game, that want to be sort of like the underdog, if you will. Like, you know, you may have not been recruited by Tennessee, Connecticut, you know, whoever at the time, but you can come to St. Joe's and have that chip on your shoulder and prove, and let's beat those teams. You know, let's beat those teams together. So I think that was something that I was selling because I was that kid. You know, I turned down Penn State and I turned down Connecticut to come to St. Joe's. So, you know, and those are the type of players that I wanted to recruit. And also just having a pulse on the team at the time and always a fan, you know, always watching to see, you know, what's going on and being familiar with the players in the program at the time because, you know, anytime there's a there's a change in leadership, you want to have the players know and have the confidence in the person coming in that they're going to, A, take care of you, make sure they're putting them in successful situations, and develop the whole player and the whole person. And it's not just about basketball. It's about balance, and it's about academics, and it's about, you know, who are you at 22, and where do you want us to take you? What kind of characteristics are you going to have when you walk in here and then when you walk out? And so that was very, very important to me. And that was something that I sold to the St. Joe's administration because I lived it. I know what it was. I know what it is. And I know what it can do for a player. And I knew what it can do for a program.
How important was the timing if the St. Joe's opening in this situation comes 3 years earlier and you're not a head coach, you've just gotten the assistant job at Loyola. How important was that experience of running a program and having success at Loyola? Because this isn't just any job you're taking. This is your alma mater. This is special.
Mm-hmm. I think it was, 3 years prior, I would have never gotten the job. And I wouldn't have hired me either, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it was it's a head coach's job. I think when you, at the time, sometimes administrators want to hire assistants from bigger programs. Mm-hmm. Well, that's fine, but they're going to be gone in 3 or 4 years, and they're going to be going to the next thing. And it depends on what the administration wants. Do you want longevity? Do you want somebody that's going to be loyal to the players, to the program, to the university? Or do you want somebody to just have a 3-year shortstop and out of here? Who are we? And that's something that, you know, the administration decided that this is what we were going to do. And I was the person and never looked back.
We talked about pressure earlier. Any extra pressure because this is home? This is, and I have to do a good job because this is home.
Sure. I mean, I think that's you've invested so much, and you want to make sure that the players have the same experience that you've had when you were going through it. It wasn't always easy. It's not easy, because if it was easy, everybody would do it. You know, I think the challenge today is that everybody wants a quick fix. They want to fix things. They want to play right away. You know, as I mentioned to you, I didn't play my freshman year. Mm-hmm. I played behind Debbie Black, who was an unbelievable player. I'm a Gatorade Player of the Year in Pennsylvania, you know, All-American. I don't play my freshman year. This, in this day and age, that's, people leave. You know, people want to, they want the quick fix and understanding, like, you know, what is a program? You know, what is the program? Well, if you're not there in the program long enough, you're not going to understand what the program can do for you. Mm-hmm. So that's the big challenge, I think, for today. And we need to adjust as coaches, for sure.
Are things going a million miles a minute when you first settle in at St. Joe's? Or because of the experience at Loyola, are you feeling pretty, just with dealing with everything, are you able to slide right in?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's anytime anything's new, I think you got to get your ducks in line. You got to get to the players. What do we have? What do we need? And then your staff. You know, you have to look at your staff and say, okay, well, you know, I would like to bring my staff from Loyola with me, who at the time was one of my staff members was Kerry Homan. I was able to hire Kerry Nemeth Homan. She was at William & Mary. She was a former teammate of mine in coaching. Great fit. Come back to St. Joe's. Joe Logan, who was an assistant at Loyola, who was going for the Loyola job when I departed. So I had to wait till that kind of played out. And then, you know, hired Lynn Milligan, who was at Drexel at the time. And so, again, my staff had, it was very important that I hired people with a lot of experience, because we needed, because we were young, you know, we were young in that situation. And then once that happened, we just kind of flew, you know, we just kind of said, okay, this is organization, recruiting, you know, academics, and you put everything in line, and what are our resources, and what do we need to do, and what do we need to fix, and those type of things. So busy, and in the meantime, was engaged to be married in that September, so mm-hmm. that was going on. So it is a blur when I look back, Matt. I haven't really actually thought about it, but we did a lot in about 6 months. You know, we did a lot, but again, couldn't do it without the support of the staff and the administration.
And I think I know the answer to this, but when you get this job, do you look at this as a situation where at the time you're like, if things go well, this is where I want to be? This, you talk about hiring assistants, 3-4. This is what it's all about. This is the top of the mountain for me.
Well, I think you don't really know at the time. You know, you're like, okay, this is where I am. Be where your feet are and see where that takes you. You know, certainly we've had a lot of like big shoes to fill, you know, as far as NCAA tournaments and getting there and A-10 championships. And, you know, you always want more, you know, you always want more. So I never really thought about moving on, you know, mm-hmm. to a different school. I think the philosophy is be where your feet are. And if the opportunity presents itself and that's what you want at the time, then that's what you want at the time. But, you know, really, I haven't really thought about that too much.
So you do have success. I think it's 6 20-win seasons, 11 postseason appearances, 2 NCAA tournament appearances, also 3 Big Five titles. How important is the Big Five to you in this day and age? Because I think for some people, I feel like there's almost a bit of a renaissance. There's almost kind of a return to how special and cool this is. How big is it for you?
It's very big. I think it's a lot of pride. You know, that we have some great players and great coaches in the Philadelphia Big Five. And I really do believe that it prepares all of us for the leagues that we compete in and represent, whether it be the Atlantic 10, the Ivy League, the Big East, the AAC. They're very, very reputable conferences. And for us to beat up on each other, and you got to add, you know, the CAA in there also with Drexel. The fact that we have that on our schedule every year and it's built in, their top 100 RPIs every year, that has been incredible because that only sets you up for success later on in the year. But during the time of the Big Five games, you respect every coach, and you respect every player, but you know, at the end of the day, you want to beat up on them, mm-hmm. right? You want to win those games, and you want to have that pride with the players that are on the court and understand what it means to play in a Big Five, play in the Big Five, compete and win a championship. You know, I think that's really, really important, even in this day and age.
We talked about some of your favorite moments as a player. So I'll give you the same question to this point as a coach. If I ask you, let's rate some of the moments that are burned into your memory as the head coach of the St. Joseph's University Hawks, what's at the top of the list?
Number one, 2013 A-10 championship. I think the score was 47-46. We may have set basketball back 25 years. But we were the first women's team to compete at the Barclay Center up in New York, and win a championship on that court was unbelievable. And then the second was the following year, getting the at-large bid and beating Georgia in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And then number three was beating George Washington, and I believe it was 08 in the in the semifinal game. They were ranked number six in the country, and beating them was pretty special.
So you are one of, what was it? You're one of very few players that have competed in the NCAA tournament as a player and as a coach. One more satisfying than another, or are they different types of satisfaction getting to that level?
You know what? I think... You mean as a player and as a
and
coach?
And as a coach.
Yeah. I think as a player, you're kind of just like, you don't really know what you're doing. Like, you're just kind of going through it, and you don't really understand the impact of it until after. You know, I think you enjoy it. You know, you're competing. You have great friends on the team. You know, winning always helps, right? And then now when you come back and you reminisce with your teammates and you talk about these records and you look at the media guy and you say, wow, we were pretty good, you know. But at the time, you knew you were good, but you just didn't know, like, how good you were because you weren't really comparing yourself with everybody else. And now with the records, you do. And then as a coach, I think you understand a little bit more. You know, you understand it, again, not maybe at the time, all the time, but you understand what the goal setting is and what's right for this team and what's a home run for this team? What's a grand slam? You know, some teams have a lot of talent and they don't win very many games. Some teams have less talent and they win more games. And some teams have talent and win games. And that's the fun. That's when it's really, really fun.
How would you describe your style? Say you were recruiting my daughter. What would you tell me about if they come to St. Joe's, this is what we're going to do?
Yeah, if you come to St. Joe's, we're developing the whole person. You know, we're developing you on and off the court. We want to play... From a basketball standpoint, we want to play fast. We want to score in the first 6 seconds of the shot clock. If not, we're running offense. We're very balanced. We get balanced scoring from everyone. We have situations where one game is going to, you know, if you're a point guard, you're going to get shots. You know, if you're a post player, you're going to get shots. If you're a shooter, you're going to get shots. So we're going to put you in the most successful situation to help us win games.
How have you changed as a coach over your career, let's say from the day you take over in mid-December at Loyola to now? What's the biggest change in your approach, your style, your way you deal with kids? What would you say to?
Yeah, I would say that experience definitely helps. You know, I think understanding where the player comes from, you know, I think understanding that this player may need this player may need that, and it's not a one blanket thing for everybody. And to get your team to understand that is very, very important because, you know, you may need to, you know, from lifting weights to conditioning to shooting this amount to, you know, getting shots here. So everybody bring something different to the table. And everybody has a role, and how important that is to verbalize the role and also to help the player understand their role and to help them facilitate the role. I think that's the most important thing. Like, it's not one blanket thing for everybody.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being where women's basketball was, say, in the early 70s, to 10 being where you think it should be, where are we on the scale?
I think we're about an 8. You know, we're about an 8. I think there's much more work to be done as far as, putting people in the stands, marketing, and growing the game that way, and also giving back. You know, I think now the game is, I wouldn't say it's all AAU basketball, but a lot has to do with AAU basketball. So the grassroots program, we're trying to really, really dig deep into that and to get the coaches equipped to teach youth and to teach basketball and to get the skill level where it needs to be able to compete. I think you see a lot of bigger, faster, stronger athletic players out there, but do we see more skill out there? And that's where I think we need to continue to grow the game.
How about from a media standpoint? I'll give you the same scale. What would you say? Not just media, but as far as being on a level equal to men's basketball.
Well, I'm going to plug you right here, Matt, because you've done an unbelievable job. And really, you have done an unbelievable job with everybody here in the Philadelphia area, Division 1, 2, and 3, and giving us a voice on the radio. And I think that is tremendous. So I would say, Matt Leon, a 10. This is a tough one. I'm going to say a 6.
Okay.
I'm going to say a 6. Yeah, there's more to be done. There's more features like this to be done, player features. And I really think we have some work to do.
So do you ever think, because I just fascinated, the UConn thing, I didn't know that. Do you ever think, what if? Because that was when you're getting recruited to UConn, they weren't UConn yet. They were on the upswing. But do you ever think how the journey might be different if you'd gone there?
I wouldn't be the St. Joe coach. I can tell you that much. So it would have been different. I don't know where it would have been. I knew that, I do look back and say, oh, I would have went to the first Final Four with Connecticut, you know. But I don't know if I would be where I am today. So, you make the choices and, I do believe that making the choice to go to St. Joe's, and that's why I'm the head coach at St. Joe's today.
Cindy Griffin, thanks so much for coming in.
Matt, appreciate you.
And that will do it for this week's show. One-on-One is an original sports podcast from KYW News Radio. If you like the show and want to help us out, make sure you are subscribed so you don't miss an episode. You can help more people find out about the podcast by finding the show on Apple Podcasts and leaving a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at One-on-One Pod, and you can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Many thanks to Cindy Griffin, head women's basketball coach at St. Joseph's University, for coming in today. You can follow Coach Griffin on Twitter at CindyGriffin11. My name is Matt Leon. Come back next week for another good conversation with someone you should know more about.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds, and grow your business fast.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's what you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.